Welcome to Launch, where we explore the world of invention and entrepreneurship. I'm Jim DeBetta, here with my co-host Ron Reardon, our producer Lee Cantor, and returning, I'll call him a special guest, Jay Johnson of 5 Minute Productions. Good morning, guys.
Hello.
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 Okay, now we're all here. Now what?
Echo, echo.
There's more? Is there more to this?
That's it.
Show's over.
It's been a great day.
Thanks for having us.
We'll talk to you next week.
Tip your waitresses.
All right, guys. Wow, it's August. Cannot believe it. Summer's not really gone, but kids go back to school next week. It just doesn't feel right.
What do you mean?
Coming from New York, kids didn't go back to school till after Labor Day.
Oh, that's right.
Then
yeah.
It feels like they should be going back to school. But
that's
now,
like a month from now. When's Labor Day? September?
Yeah, first week of September, right?
Yeah. And you can always tell when school's getting close because the traffic in Atlanta gets worse and worse.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is nice driving around now, I got to say. That's for sure. Well, this week we're going to do what I think we could probably do every week if we wanted to, which is answer inventor emails that Ron and I get on a regular basis. And fortunately for inventors, a lot of the questions are always the same, right, Ron?
Yes, they are. Standard answers.
So we're going to have Jay, our resident branding expert, has agreed to moderate the session and read just some of the many questions that we get. So let's kick it off, Jay.
All right. Well, guys, the first question that usually comes up is, what do I do if I have multiple inventions?
You want me to answer that one?
Go ahead.
That's why I developed 41 questions that I send out to all the newbie inventors. And I said, you know, use these 41 questions. If you get a score of 60 or higher, that's an indication to go forward. And if you got multiple ideas, pick the one with the highest number. And that allows them to kind of prioritize their ideas because they need to work on just one idea at a time. Because if you scatter your energies with multiple inventions, none of them are going to get done.
That is absolutely true. I have to agree. And without a test, and I haven't seen this test run, I want to see these questions. But I tell people this all the time that, like anything, you can't do multiple things at once, especially when it comes to this same type of business. And when people go through something once and they learn properly, then they'll know what to do the second time and the third time.
Right. And I actually brought those 41 questions with me. We actually covered 6 of them one time when you were out gallivanting around the country.
Nice.
And the very first question is it significantly better than what's out there? Because as you well know, if somebody has an invention that's only 10% better than what's out there, that's probably not going to make it. It's really got to have some wow factor.
Well, but let me ask you something, because that's a question that if I'm an inventor and you ask me, I think the answer is going to be obvious. I'm going to say, yeah, it's better than everything that's out there. So how do you make it more objective and take their emotions out of that?
Yeah, when I send it to them, I tell them that, you know, this is a subjective test. And especially if they're married or they've got a trusted companion, I tell them to make 2 copies of this test for them to go into 2 separate rooms. Both of them, you know, assess it and then get back and compare the answers.
That definitely will help because, I mean, that's one of the roadblocks with inventors is that, I mean, ask them if they think their invention's great, and many of those inventions are good, but some of them
But they're kind of blinded by their own.
Yeah, well, even the questions themselves will say things like, you know, stage of development. You know, if the thing's packaged and ready to be put on the shelf, you know, you can score high. But I said, you know, if it needs a little more work, score mid-range. If it needs a lot more work, score low. And it says, be honest. Okay, so there's little clues in here, cues of telling them, you know, I know it's your baby. I know you're in love with it. But, you know, be realistic.
It's tough. And it's even more difficult when they just have ideas. They have nothing done yet. So, and I get these calls constantly where people say, I've got an idea. And, oh, by the way, I've got dozens of ideas, and I think of things every day, and that's more difficult to deal with than someone that's got a couple things in different phases of development. So maybe somebody's filed for a patent for one thing, but they've got prototypes for something else. I think it's a little easier to kind of say, okay, well, let's see what you've done for those few things you've worked on so far, and let's pick one that has the best shot.
Yeah, because as soon as I hear that I've got, you know, multiple ideas and I have ideas every day, all the alarm bells go off in my head and I start wondering if I really want this person as a client, if they won't focus. But the other thing is that, and my brain just completely went blank, but that's always a warning sign that they might not be able to focus. Yeah, that came back to me. A lot of times the very next thing they'll say after I've got ideas all the time is I don't really want to take this to market or do any work or do any investment in it. I just want a company to take it and run with it.
Well, yeah, and that's a whole other subject about about this business. And I say this over and over and over again. Inventing is a business. It's such a serious thing. I mean, think about all the retailers and the limited amount of space they have. So I think the big takeaway on this question is that you have to focus, like you said, Ron, and you have to concentrate on one thing. You know, you have to determine which of your ideas has the most merit and potential,
right?
And work on that one and only that one.
Right. So if you're a beginner, pick one, pick your best one and go with that. If you're maybe if you've had 50 products out there, then, you know, other people listen to you if you have a list of things.
Because if you got, you know, multiple ideas, I mean, one way is to sort them down by size. Because if one of your ideas is as big as a truck and then the other one is the size of, you know, a postage stamp, I'd go with a smaller one. Okay.
Work your way up.
Yeah, items that are doable. I mean, if you want to, you know, create some, you know, a rocket ship, that's a little more difficult, especially if it's your first invention. But if you want to do something that doesn't have moving parts, it's something that's made of plastic, something that's simple to reproduce and go through the process, those are usually much easier to go through than something that's got a lot more complications and costs a lot more money to develop, too.
Yeah, I mean, if it's going to need FDA approval versus one that, you know, there's absolutely no regulation on it whatsoever, you know, pick the one with no regulation.
There you go. What do you think, Jay?
As a follow-up question, if someone comes to you with multiple ideas, and let's say they develop one, do you steer them to develop them independently as their own individual products, create an umbrella company that manages all of them? You know, you see the As Seen on TV thing, and they have, you know, products in every single field. If someone is in that sort of realm, do you... How do you recommend they proceed in that market?
I think the short answer is that you have to understand what their goals are. So if you're the type of person who wants to retire soon or you don't want to run a company, then it's probably not a good idea to continually build a business where you have multiple products being built. That's when licensing comes into play. If you don't want to do the work, you don't want to work a 40 or 50 or 60 hour week, you take those items, especially if you've been successful before, learn how to license them, learn how to approach companies, and do it that way. But you got to be ready to be in business and run a company full time if you want to, you know, continuously take products to market.
Yeah, and I would still steer them towards focusing on just one of them.
Oh, sure.
And be looking at, you know, when they sell a product, is that it? Is that the end of the story? Or is there any kind of residual income that can come from that? Or is it going to be like the razor handle and the razor blade where they're going to continually need blades? Or is it going to be, you know, once you buy this, then goodbye, see you, and you never see them again?
Gotcha. Okay. Lee, you have anything to add?
I agree.
Smart man.
They're
over
the
there.
Smart ones. What do I know? I'm the one asked half those questions.
All right. Then question number two, which I know I don't know, but I'm fairly sure you never get. I'm broke. I have absolutely no money.
That is a new one.
How can I get my invention developed?
I mean, I can go off on this one, Ron. I'll let you start.
Well, I mean, when people tell me that they don't have enough money for the patent, to me, that's a really great indicator that they just need to stop. I mean, it's one thing to have a great, what appears to be a great idea, but if you don't have the money for the patent, you certainly don't have the money for everything that comes after the patent, okay? And sometimes the patent shouldn't be the first thing, okay? Sometimes there needs to be, you know, prototypes built and development and the market, you know, size determined and all the things that Jim does before you even should think about the patent, okay? Everybody's paranoid that somebody's going to steal their idea, and the reality is people don't steal ideas. They steal products that are selling. Okay, that's when you got to worry about getting knocked off.
You know, when I was in high school, I remember my friends and I would see, you know, older people driving around really nice cars, and there used to be this old saying where, you know, if you can't afford the insurance, then you can't afford the car.
Right.
And it's kind of like how it applies here. If you can't afford the very basics, mm-hmm. If you're going to file for patents or do patent searches, if you can't even do that, or if you say I only have a few hundred dollars. I mean, really, with all due respect, it's not a business you should be in because, again, it's a business, and there's going to be a lot of times you're going to be writing checks.
Right, and they have to have a pile of money to grow this if they're serious. It's not, there's nothing out there. You guys have been in this business forever. There's nothing out there where a patron adopts a great idea and then takes him under his wing and then pays for the whole thing and gives the inventor all the money. Well, right? That doesn't exist.
I'm still looking for that guy.
Yeah, and you know what? The scary part is that for the one in a million times that happens, then everybody else thinks that can happen to them. Yeah. And it's actually a detriment to people,
right?
Because they see somebody on the cover of a magazine and they think that there's no sacrifice, there's no story. They think those people just woke up, thought of an idea.
Right.
2 months later, they're making millions. It's so rare. You have a better shot at buying lotto tickets and hoping to win there.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, if you can't afford the insurance, don't buy the car. You weren't around when this happened, but I was. When the Mustang first came out to the marketplace, very first time, a friend of mine that was older than I was went and bought a Mustang and brought it down to the little country store where we all gathered. And everybody's like, oh, man, this is cool. And he said, yeah, this is the best thing I'll get. 2 days later, he turned the Mustang back in because he couldn't afford the insurance. I mean, he was 17 years old. You know what insurance is like until you hit 25. And it was considered to be a sports car, you know, probably prone for high speed and accidents. And once he saw what the insurance was going to be, there was absolutely no way he could afford it. And back it went, and he got a, you know, bigger old clunker.
That's a good lesson, because don't pursue this until you have the funds to pursue this. Right?
I thought you were going to say he didn't have money to put gas in the car, so he had to push it home. Right. So he figured he'd just push it back to the dealership and say,
I can't afford
it. It's a sadder
story. He had to get rid of the whole car.
Yeah. Well, I used to work at that little country store, and people at that time came in and got a dollar's worth of gas. I mean, this is when gas was about 30 cents a gallon, okay? But they would get a dollar's worth of gas, ride around for a while, and then they'd come back and get another dollar's worth of gas.
Yeah.
What can you get for a dollar? I mean, you can go to like McDonald's and get like, you know, the dollar menu, but that's
Taco Bell.
Yeah.
Value menu.
There's some good dollar values out there, but yeah, gas, forget a dollar. I'd get from here to home and that's about it, if that. But yeah, I mean, that's a big problem. And like I said, there's no national inventing fund. And although, you know, I got this thing in the mail from the Smithsonian. It was just like an advertisement. They have this thing called like Adopt a Museum. I'm thinking, what if there was some kind of like adopt an inventor. But then who's going to manage the money? And then, you know, if somebody puts money into one of these adopt the programs, they're going to want something out of it later on. But that's not the point of these adopting programs.
For the first time ever, in the most recent issue of Inventor's Digest, there's this big ad that says seedcapital.com. And it says, you know, they loan folks, depending on their credit score, $50,000. And that they've, in the last year, they've seeded about $2 million worth at $50,000 a pop.
Mm, it's definitely not the first and won't be the last company to offer. There's plenty of those types of companies.
Well, a loan is different than a grant.
That's true.
but
I was just reading a book called Raising Capital When You Don't Have a Silicon Valley Address. The author of that was just at the Inventors Club here in Atlanta. And there was one chapter from the guy from SBIR where you can actually get grants from the government.
Mm-hmm.
You would not believe how long it takes to get those grants. I mean, number one, you have to invent in an area that a government agency wants a problem solved.
Right.
Okay. And something like one out of nine of the applications that go in actually get accepted. Okay. And it's something like a 5-year journey before you ever can actually, you know, get this the $100,000 grant.
Exactly.
Okay, and then, but they did say that if you ever get the $100,000 grant, that's phase one. When you go to phase two of SBIR, the probability is about 50% that you're going to get that second grant, which is $750,000.
Oh, so it might be worth it if you have the time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You got to have it's a long timeline.
People can get money. People are afraid to approach family and friends, but unfortunately, that's how you're going to have to do it. I mean, most inventors are not going to take their idea, even with a decent business plan, with no sales history, with no business background, and they're going to get a couple $100,000. I very rarely see it. It's a reality you have to wake up to. You're going to have to ask your mother, your brother, your next door neighbor, or friend of a friend. If you're afraid to go out and ask for money,
right. Why would a stranger give you money if your mom's not giving you money?
They don't. That's the thing. They don't. And I know there's a lot of initiatives out there, Ron, that where people want to help and try to help. But you know what? They know what the risks are, too. They know that a lot of inventors, unfortunately, are not going to handle the money right. Or they're going to try to rush through the process and they're going to spend money on things they shouldn't.
Right.
But
But to answer your question, Jay, one of my favorite real true life stories was a young fellow had a science project that he was supposed to turn in, and his next door neighbor was a patent attorney, and the patent attorney came over to kind of visit, looked at his science project that he was going to take in the next day, and he said, "Don't take this in," and wrote a note to the teacher of the guy completed the project, but he can't show it to you. And what it was, it basically was a pooper scooper, okay? But it was a device that used regular bags that you get from the grocery store, the little plastic bags. And it was for people in wheelchairs that had dogs. And it was a device that allowed them to clean up after their dogs, okay, from the wheelchair. And his parents got a second mortgage on their home in order to finance this, okay? And he's had sales as far away as Australia, okay? And he now makes more money from that than his parents were making, both of them employed, okay, and has paid back the second mortgage, and, you know, they're living large, you know, off of his invention.
But I tell people, don't – that's risky.
I mean, it is.
That's the nice side of the story. But
right.
I always tell people, don't run up your credit cards to the hilt. Don't take out a home equity loan. Don't drain your 401k. If you can't afford – it's like Vegas. If you can't afford to go and play and spend your money
and
come home without changing your life – don't do it.
Okay.
So if you don't have any money,
don't go all in on this.
Well, not to start
13 black.
That's right.
10 grand down.
Not to start a more extensive conversation, but
you
what
will.
About, well, sure. What about venture capitalists, angel investors? What are they looking for as far as inventors are concerned? Because I know they exist out there for inventors, but I'm sure they're just not throwing money out the window.
Yeah, and the book that I was just reading on raising capital basically says that, you know, with an angel investor, okay, because, you know, VCs are going to want to take part of the company and take control and, you know, mm-hmm. goodbye, it was nice, all like that. But if you're looking for early stage funding, they're going to want to see a really good, you know, business plan, you know, to see what the market is and everything. And it's really, if you expect to go in and make a presentation and have them write a check, it's not happening. It's basically a four-month relationship. You know, it could be
gotcha.
4 months to, you know, a couple of years of developing a relationship with these people because it's their money. I mean, they reach into their pocket, pull out their checkbook, and they write the check. And it's usually not just one of them. It's a whole herd of them where they're kind of sharing the risk, you know, to get you the money that you need.
Yeah. And by the way, VCs don't fund startup inventors. They don't.
That's not happening.
Venture capital is, and when you talk about early stage run, inventors don't need early stage money. They need prior money. They need seed capital. These are the people that say,
right.
I haven't spent a dime. I need 100 grand, 200 grand. And by the way, most angels, and I know a couple, they will not give anybody a dime unless they see that they've put some of their own money in and taken
right.
some risk. I wouldn't
right.
back somebody unless they're willing to take some risk. So angel investors, obviously, are usually well-off individuals. They'll look at it, but yeah, unless you have a great business plan, you're not getting money.
Yeah. In addition to the plan, I mean, Jay, is it just you, or do you have a team of people that have, you know, started from nothing and made, you know, a couple million bucks, and they're getting ready to do it again? Because that's what the angel investors look for, is not just your idea, not just the market. What have you? Do you have the ability to attract some really talented people to you, okay, that have got the energy and the resources and the track record to actually take this thing forward?
Advisory teams. I mean, that's a key component of anybody's plan.
Right.
You know, if you're a school teacher and you're not in the business of marketing products to retailers, they're going to look at that and they say, well, you may be the greatest teacher in the world, but if you don't know anything about selling products to retail chains, who's going to do that? And at the end of the
right.
day, it's
somebody's
all about sales.
Somebody's got to do the work,
yeah.
you know? So if you don't have the team around you,
very difficult. It's
no team, no money.
Yeah, you got to have
no
some
job.
Money. You could definitely do things and try to save money and do them for less and network and get, you know, people you know that know other people to help you and beg for discounts. I mean, there's things you could do. But you still need money. So.
Yeah. And part of the item on when I talked about this 4 month developing the relationship, one of the things that the angels are going to look for is, are you the kind of person that can take advice from them about how to grow your business?
Right, because that's an unintended consequence. If somebody's giving you money, they're going to have opinions about how that money should be spent. It's not like they just give you a blank check and go, oh, see you later. We'll check in next year. You know, they're going to want to know what's going on.
Gotcha.
So if you're the kind of person that's not going to take advice, they're not going to give you the money.
Got it. All right.
Is that your way of asking that you need some money?
I beat around the bush. That's how I do it.
It seems like a lot of money questions.
You know. I'm here to do follow-ups. I'm moderating.
Thanks.
all right, Ron, I think this one's for you. Do I need a patent?
And the standard answer is it depends, okay?
Oh.
I would ask, how long do you expect this your idea to sell? If it's going to sell a year or two, then forget to getting a patent. You don't need to just go out there and sell it. Like the Pet Rock, I think, sold for about a year. It didn't need a patent, okay? But if it's going to sell, if it's going to be like Velcro or Kevlar or, you know, things like that, is it going to sell year after year after year, then a patent should be considered. But the follow-on question is, well, can you actually get a patent? And that's where a patent search comes in, because there's really nothing new underneath the sun, okay? But you know, if your invention has some points of novelty where it could actually get a patent, then you can kind of go forward.
And licensing too, Ron. I think you would agree that when you want to try to obtain a licensing deal, having a patent or patent position is very compelling.
Right, because if all you got is just an idea, then you got nothing to license, okay? I mean, unless it's you've got some trade secret process for making it that you're keeping, you know, under close surveillance and everything. But otherwise, you know, you need to have, you know, a government-granted right to prohibit others from making, using, selling, or importing the device in order to have something to license.
How often do inventors come and say, oh, okay, well, my idea will only sell for a year? Seems to me that if I invented something, I'd be like, no, this will sell forever. The Pet Rock, sure. People will love this and, you know, in space.
Yeah, I think most people think that their product's going to continually sell. I think I can only think of one or two people in recent times that have said, you know what, I'm going to go to market with this thing. I don't care if it burns out in 6 to 12 months. If I make a few hundred grand, I'm happy. I don't need a patent. I'm good to go.
Yeah. Well, the follow-on question I would ask, if they say, yeah, it's going to sell year after year, is like, well, how big is that market, you know, potentially? If you've developed something just for left-handed dyslexic people that have red hair, then that's a pretty small market. Okay, I just made that up, okay?
Well, I'm pretty sure that's a small market, I'm thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I read one article on Inventor's Digest years ago that the fellow determined that there was probably about 1,000 people worldwide that would buy his product. And so he didn't get a patent. You know, he got a website, you know, and people found him, you know, because he promoted and everything. And he makes about one a month, okay?
So what if he sells them for $1 million each?
Yeah,
then he's fine.
He's a big winner. That's
no,
the key.
I think, you know, he sells them for about $300 each. It has something to do with magnets and kind of suspending things in midair. I mean, it's a real super novel kind of deal.
Right.
That he makes himself. But, I mean,
of a hobby. That's not like a business.
That's right. At the beginning, he realized that his market was about 1,000 folks worldwide that would really be interested in this really weird, you know, magnetic suspension thing.
Mm-hmm.
And forget patents. You know, forget a lot of stuff. Okay?
Right.
So you really need to see that. That's an extreme example, okay. like my left-handed, dyslexic, redheaded fella. If the market's small, then that changes the equation on a lot of stuff you do.
Okay.
So when you call Ron, he'll just say it depends, and then,
then
we move on.
It always depends.
He's going to send you that.
But call Ron
quiz.
Anyway, so you can hear it firsthand from him on the phone. That's fine. That's right. Good. Patents and more. I mean, that's what you got to do. So. All right, Jay, what else do we have here? I know there's an endless array of questions.
I'm sure there's many. What are the best ways to market my product?
Dun, 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 dun.
It's Jim's time.
There's one way, right?
Yeah, there's only one way, you know.
The Jim way.
Yeah, the Jim way.
The patented Jim way.
You know, this is a tricky thing because, you know, 5 years ago, social media marketing didn't exist.
Right.
And now it's at least that is a good, inexpensive, if not free way to gain exposure. Now, again, there's tactics to doing that too. It's not just about going on Facebook, setting up a profile, and having, you know, your 100 best friends, you know, go back
they
and forth.
They have graded it, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's useless. I mean, I have actually taken some very inexpensive courses. I've spent as little as $49 on how to use Facebook to grow your business, how to market yourself on Twitter. And they're great. I mean, they just teach you what you can do on these sites, how you can join different groups on the sites to reach. So let's say you have, you know, you have this all these chocolates in a can here today, Lee.
Yes.
So let's say you created a new kind of storage container for chocolate.
Right.
Well, I mean, if you go on the internet or you go through these social networking sites, I can almost guarantee you that there will be a group or site for something.
Chocolate lovers.
You know, and you can go on those sites. And those sites may have thousands of members on those in those groups. And then from there, who knows where else it reaches out to. So social media marketing is definitely a great way. Obviously, you know, in Jay, your world, you've got to have, you got to have a great website. You got to have a, you know, the whole branding thing down. So,
oh, sure.
I mean, what are we've talked about the basics, but I mean, from a marketing standpoint, what do you think of the 1, 2, 3 type things that people have to have?
Well, from a financial point of view, the least expensive would be website, social media, as the two main focuses there. Just because you can set up a website that'll last essentially forever with minimum upkeep costs, and social networking is something you can do on your own time, assuming you do it correctly.
Right. And, you know, websites are the new business card. So if you're going to market through the internet, if you don't have a website, people have nowhere to go or turn to learn about what you're doing. But it's still got to be done right. Like right. When you do logos and taglines for people, that's really the basis, the foundation of a good right. marketing program. Because if you're marketing something that looks incorrect or it's just sloppy or it's not consistent, you can't build a brand on right. that kind of work.
Yeah, and I mean, it's sort of common sense when it comes to branding, but when people go to, say, a law office's website, they don't want to see bright colors, happy fun time, goofy jokes, and,
right.
and I'm here for a lawyer. They need to be serious. They need to be, you know, super professional as far as how
so
they look.
So the website should reflect whatever the product is.
Right.
So if it's a kid's product, it should be kind of kid-like. If it's fun, you know, a lawyer product, it's got to be lawyer-like.
Right. And that's one of the first ways that people tend to mess things up is they build a website that they like.
That they like.
It's, hey, right. this is beautiful to me.
Yeah,
it's
I like these colors.
Right.
Or, yeah,
right. Unfortunately, you're selling a product to 50-year-old men and you're a 18-year-old girl.
Right.
Hey, wait, it's not succeeding. I wonder why.
Yeah,
pink is a predominant color on
it's
your
my
website.
Favorite color.
That's where people mess up a lot is they do things that they apply to themselves. And I'm sure you run into it in the patent world and in the retail world where it's like, oh no, I like this, so everybody
right.
must like this.
That's one data point.
When I was getting my MBA at Georgia State, the marketing professor, Ken Bernhardt, kept saying over and over again to us, remember, you are not the target market. You right. are not the target market. You've got to put yourself in the, or hire somebody that can actually say your target market wants this. And right. that could be totally different from your personality.
Absolutely. The other thing that's really important with marketing, and I've always been a huge fan of this, is if you're a new inventor or you're an inventor and you've got a product that's actually developed, go to trade shows. There's no better way to get in front of all the major retail buyers, consumers, the press, you name it, than to attend a trade show. Again, you're going to spend a few grand on, if you're going to exhibit, getting a booth space, and of course you got to fly there and hotels and food and stuff. But dollar for dollar, other than social media marketing, that's the place. I mean, in a couple of days, you can get in front of thousands of people.
Right. Now, is this something that they can go, like say they're in their early stages, can they just go to attend?
Yeah, I encourage people, go walk the show, see what they're like, see what the vibe is about. And you could also see what other people
are doing.
And you get to just to see how it all works.
Where do they find, is there a list somewhere that has a trade show in different industries?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of websites. I don't.
You just do a Google search.
Yeah, you could do that. Google. You just put, you know, trade shows for pet products or trade shows for sporting good products. And you'll
it'll
see,
pop up.
Yeah, and there's in every industry, there that's are like, many trade shows. But you always want to try to go to the biggest ones.
One.
Or if there's a regional show, go close
something
to home.
Nearby, right.
Just
right.
to see.
Yeah, because, you know, one of my favorite movies is Top Gun. In fact, my sons, Drew and Erica, can repeat the dialogue, you know, from almost every part of Top Gun from beginning to end. There's this one scene where they go into a bar, and of course there's lots of females there, and they say, you know, this is what I call a target-rich environment.
Right.
And trade showers are like that. Okay, you've got this concentration, you know, of competitors and buyers, you know, and reps and all like that. And I agree with Jim, that is the place to go, okay, is to a trade show.
And I think you should also, you know, if you have a little more money to spend, when I started out, what I did was instead of advertising in consumer magazines, which are the magazines that you can get on the newsstand, so if it's, say it's sporting goods, you know, Sports Illustrated, people would say, well, I'm going to run an ad in Sports Illustrated and everyone's going
right,
to buy my product.
Because there are so many millions of people that think that'll be the best way to
but
do it.
But the reality is, A, you can't just run one ad. You got to run ads continuously to leave an impression on people. Finally, they'll start saying, oh, I keep seeing this company in here. I should give them a call.
Right.
But the advertising in trade magazines, the ones that the buyers and the industry read, is much more powerful because those are the people that can actually purchase your product
in mass.
Right. So if you're in the sporting goods industry, you know, there's trade magazines for sporting goods and for outdoor products and for pet products, you name it. There's a magazine for it, and usually you have to subscribe and when I was selling Sport Optics binoculars, all the buyers that bought binoculars would read the magazines in the trade.
Right.
So they see your ad and they call you up and say, oh, I see your company. You guys
got
look
a
like
new product.
Right. Yeah, you send me a sample. That's a good way to reach people. And those ads are a lot less expensive than consumer magazine ads.
Right. You can probably run it for years for the price of one Sports Illustrated.
It was funny. I had a client who, a couple of clients that wanted to think about running ads in like Parenting Magazine or Baby Talk. Some of those ads, one ad, one full page, four color ad, $50,000-$60,000. One ad.
Easy.
That's why you always see the big companies in there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And if you get a little tiny eighth of a page ad in the back of the magazine, no one's ever going to see it.
Right.
I mean,
right.
A lot of people read magazines. I read a study that most people read magazines, and it was like 80-something percent of them get only like not even halfway through the magazine, and they abandon it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Wow.
Yeah. So. And how much product do you need to sell in order to break even on the $50,000 to $60,000 ad?
That's just an ego thing. When you say, "Oh, I have, look at my ads," and you know, but at the end of the day, when the high wears off, you realize that you haven't sold anything and you've just spent a lot of money for nothing.
Right. And I can tell you from my own experience. You know, I did some advertising in some magazines and newspapers and like that early on, and it was a total tossing away of money.
Well, that's why at least people have the benefit of talking to us and us teaching them that, you know, here are things you can do, here are things you just shouldn't spend your money on. And then there's grassroots marketing efforts, and there's a lot of things you could do, and that's a whole other discussion again. But I think hopefully we've covered at least some of the basic things that you should and probably shouldn't do to get your product marketed.
So basically, if you don't have any money...
Social media market. Get on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and spend hours on there, and that's effective. It's effective in my business. You know, hopefully it's effective in yours, Jay. I know it is for you, and that's how you reach people.
Yeah, right. Because finding the key people, that's the secret right there.
But you're trading, instead of money, you're trading time.
That's right.
Right.
Do we have time for one more question?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Because this one I know is important to inventors, without a doubt.
Let's hear it.
The other ones weren't.
Well, the other ones are sort of just...
But this is the killer question.
This is the one that definitely...
We have to leave it hanging. Read like the first three words. And
right,
then
they go, well, next
to be continued.
Am I building up drama?
Drama. Dum.
How do I know, as an inventor, who to trust in hiring people in other fields?
Trust no one. Hide. Run and hide.
You know, When I run across a Jim DeBetta of the world that is going to get my product into retail space, or I run across a Ron Reardon who's going to do fantastic patent work for me, how do I know I can trust you?
And that's a good question. You know, kind of a disclosure here, I'm president of the United Inventors Association, okay, and we have a certification program for vendors or people that deal with inventors. And they have to give us at least three recent clients that are happy with their work, and they have to answer a lot of other questions. They have to be based in the United States, have a tax ID, things like that. So that's one place to go to find trusted source. The other place to go is to go to your local inventors club and ask the people there, you know, what do you think about this vendor? Well, this guy, you know, never was on time, you know, he gave me shoddy work, you know, wasn't happy with him. Well, that's a clue that you don't want to hire that person. But if they said, yeah, you know, they did the work on the marketing or the prototype or the patent or whatever, I was real happy with it, then that's a person that you want to engage. You know, it's just, you know, ask people that have had experience with, you know, vendors, you know, how they feel about that particular vendor. And one good source is to actually go to Inventors Club and ask the inventors there, who did you use? Were you happy with them? You know, what they do right, what they do wrong.
So it's not by going by the TV commercial I saw or the back of the magazine ad?
I mean, it's not to say that, when, you know, look, and that's something we should talk about. Because just because people run ads and spend big money on marketing doesn't mean that they're not trustworthy. I mean, it just so happens that sometimes that's the way it goes. But, I mean, I run ads.
Right.
Does that mean that I'm not trustworthy? I mean, that's... I don't like when people say that, because that's not a fair assessment. They feel like, well, the more money you spend, the less trustworthy you are in promoting your business. But the reality is that if I'm an inventor and I call up Ron, I'm going to say, Ron, give me references. And Ron should say without hesitation, how many do you need? You want three references, five references? I give out as many as people want. They can call any of my clients. My clients are going to say, Jim's good. He knows what he's doing. You know, he's worked with me for 6 months, a year, 2 years. There's nothing better than that person's clients. Now, yeah, I guess one could say, well, what if they're just giving you their sister or friend or something? But yes, you can go to the United Inventors Association and check any company, and they have obviously a screening process like that I went through, that where they check to make sure that that you are legitimate, that you're an actual real business in good standing, you could go to the Better Business Bureau. You should ask people at invention clubs if they've had a good experience. And, of course, you could verify things. I mean, today you can go on the Internet and do from criminal background checks to bankruptcy checks to, I mean, there's all kinds of ways to check on people.
Right.
But typically, so like somebody like Ron who's been in the business for many years, everybody in the industry knows who he is. So if somebody calls me up and says, hey, have you heard of this guy Ron Reardon? And they trust me, then they're probably going to just trust Ron on that merit alone.
But so you have to vet the people. You have to do your homework. You can't just trust an ad you see. You got to do more than that.
That's
you got to dig a little deeper.
Absolutely.
Like if you go to my website, patentsandmore.com, the little Better Business Bureau icon's there. You click on it, it goes straight to my file with the Better Business Bureau so that you can see if there's any complaints, which there's not any. And then also on my website, it has links to all the clients that I have that are actually actively selling their products. You know, you can go straight to their websites and see, you know, the Picture Placer and the Love Cross and different things like that. So that's, you know, just do your research.
And the reality is that there's no 100% guarantee.
No.
I mean, people could have great credentials. I mean, I have very good credentials. Ron has very good credentials. And other people have great credentials. It's about talking to other people that have had experiences with them and just doing your checks like that.
Any of you engage Jim or myself, it could be that the product didn't sell for a variety of reasons. The timing might be off, you know, or different things. And the same thing with a patent. It could be that the patent office just says, no, you can't have a patent. And that's you know, they're the final say on that. Even though your patent practitioner says, yeah, it looks like you can have one, it's the patent office that actually decides yes or no.
I mean, look at the stats on product sales and successful inventors. I posted something on LinkedIn yesterday about the percentage of people who think they're going to make millions with an invention. But the reality is that, I mean, we're talking about if it's a percent, 1% of people that actually go through the whole process and actually make a profit and earn real money on their invention ideas. So
it's less than 1%?
Yeah, it's less than 1%. Now, that's not a verifiable specific number, but I can tell you from my perspective, the amount of people that I talk to, I wouldn't disagree with that. And even if it was 5%.
Yeah, because the statistic that's given with patents quite often is that less than 5%, and some people say less than 3%, so how less we don't know, of the patents that are issued actually make more money than was spent on the patent.
Wow.
Yeah.
And there's a variety of factors for that. I mean, mainly because, you know, we were talking about how you need a team of people. Most inventors try to go it alone, and that's one of the reasons why their invention
and they don't have
the marketplace
persistence to just stick with it. I mean, a lot of it is if you just stick with it long enough, you never know that.
Well, that's why, like right now, with my coaching programs that I've been doing this past year, it's been very effective for inventors because although I'm not responsible for them selling their products to retail, I'm making sure that they talk to Ron, they talk to Jay, they talk to that they're and I'm staying on them. You know, get this done. This has to be finished. You have to do it this way. And now, like for this ABC show, the baby show that Ron and I will be at in September, you know, I have, I think, 4 or 5 clients that are exhibiting that started with me with an idea in their head. And now they actually have real products. They have patents or they don't have patents, but they've gone through the branding cycle and the marketing cycle. And now they actually are going to be showing their products to buyers. Now, will the buyers buy their product? I can't control that.
That's out of your hands.
You know, but I could lead that horse to water. I can make sure that everything is done.
They're getting a swing at the bat.
Right.
You know?
So, and like a baseball player, right? You hit 300, you're a hero, but you're only getting hit 3 out of every 10 times you get the bat. So, and that's considered great. So for us, if I had a 10 or 15% success rate, that's very good compared to what the – and same thing with Ron. But, you know, there's so many other factors, like Ron said, that we cannot control. We can't control if they say they've got money to spend and they don't, or they actually do the things they say they're going to do, or – maybe by the time
even if you got them in front of Walmart, that still doesn't guarantee that the public will buy their product.
Right.
I mean, like, the stars have to be aligned in so many different ways to hit a home run. It's, you know, it's challenging.
Yeah, so.
Well, this has been a great, great discussion. Hopefully all the entrepreneurs, inventors out there have really picked up some good tips here. And this has been another great session of Launch with Lee Cantor, Jim DeBetta, and our special guest, Jay Johnson. So we'll see you guys next time.
All right.